In 1949, Joseph Campbell's pivotal book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, was published. He had spent decades researching myths and stories from different cultures and religions from antiquity to the more modern religions like Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Most importantly, he studied their similarities and discovered that they all had in common a particular storyline, or most of them did. Campbell called this storyline the monomyth, evidently a term borrowed from James Joyce. Many today know this as the hero's journey. John Romaniello puts it well. Campbell's thesis is not simply that nearly every culture in history has found an identical and effective way to tell stories. It's that the commonalities in storytelling exist because they are a fundamental part of the human experience. The monomyth isn't only the structure of how we tell the undertakings of heroes and characters and stories. It's also how we relate those stories to ourselves, and in a very real way, how we understand the things that are happening to us. There are now various versions of the hero's stories with all sorts of different stages and steps. Some have 17, some have 3, some have 10, some have 12, depending on who's rewritten this and who's analyzed it. Some believe that we are all on our own hero's journey at any point in time, just at different stages and different journeys. Life coaches and business managers use the hero's journey to help their clients set goals. Psychologists use it to help patients find meaning in their lives or to find what point they are in their journey so they have a place to identify with and to work from to heal things in their lives. Spiritual leaders work from it to provide mentoring and guidance. We are all very familiar with many hero's journeys. King Arthur, Harry Potter, Bilbo, Frodo, Luke Skywalker. So traditional hero's journeys, mythic structure, monomyth in 12 stages. We'll do kind of a quick review. And we'll use my favorite, or one of, and that would be Star Wars. Why not? So one, the ordinary world. We meet our hero in his everyday life. We get to know him. What's he capable of? He's just like you and me, or maybe when we were whiny 18-year-olds or 12-year-olds or 16-year-olds, or I guess Luke Skywalker was somewhere 15. Anyway, we see Luke Skywalker on Tatooine doing chores and whining. I saw Star Wars when I was 18, and I remember clearly Luke Skywalker whining a lot. He's whining about the repairs he needs to make. He doesn't want to be there. He wants to go out flying. He's bored. Two, call to adventure. There's some kind of threat. Someone is in danger. It may not be dramatic. In this case, it is. It may be simple, but it disrupts the comfort of his ordinary world. Luke receives the call to action when he buys R2-D2 from the Jawas, finds the message from Princess Leia. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Three, refusal of the call. At this point, the hero has second thoughts. There's stuff to do here. Not sure I can do this anyway. Then he suffers a loss. Four, meeting the mentor. The hero is desperate. The mentor arrives with something of great importance, wisdom, advice, training, a talisman. Whatever it is, it gives the hero strength to begin his quest. Luke only follows R2-D2 into the desert because he doesn't want to get in trouble with his Uncle Owen. They run into the sand people, get in trouble, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, who explains the Force, the Empire, Jedi Knights, the whole deal. Luke refuses the call by whining again. It's too far away and he can't be of any help. He returns to the farm to find his aunt and uncle dead and everything destroyed, hence his loss. So he goes back to Obi-Wan and begins his training. I want to be a Jedi-like knight like my father. He receives his lightsaber, his advice, his training, all of the above. Crossing the threshold, the hero begins his quest in earnest, whether it's be physical, spiritual, or emotional. It will require overcoming fear and demonstrating the hero's commitment to the journey. Luke goes to the cantina to find his way off Tatooine. He is overwhelmed by all different types of beings, activity and violence. He is guided by Obi-Wan. tests allies and enemies. That's number six. The hero now faces ever more difficult challenge, must discover who his allies are and who his enemies are. His skills will be tested. He is prepared for ever greater difficulties. Of course, he meets Han Solo. He meets Chewbacca. He narrowly escapes Tatooine. They're on their way to Alderaan. All sorts of stuff happens. I know we've all seen it. Approach the Inmost Cave. The Inmost Cave may be an actual location, or it could be an inner conflict. Sometimes it's both. The hero must once again face his doubts and fears. He may need to reflect on his journey so far. Alderaan has been destroyed, and now they must rescue Leia from the Death Star. Luke struggles with his doubts. He bounces between overconfidence and abject fear. And boy, does that bounce happen a lot. And he's always never to blame. Of course, so is Han Solo, never to blame. The ordeal must be dangerous. I guess they're both on hero's journeys if you think about it. Not to mention the fact that the movie has a hero's journey, and so does the trilogy have a hero's journey, if you look at it. And so does all 9 episodes have a hero's journey. The ordeal must be dangerous. It must be dangerous. It could be physical test or an inner crisis, whichever. The hero must suffer some sort of death in order to be reborn. A resurrection that grants him greater power or insight. He must use everything he's learned along the way to overcome this challenge. If he fails, he will either die or life as he knows it will end. Luke and his friends mount a stealthy, somewhat stealthy, invasion of the Death Star and successfully rescue Leia, but not without major loss. Luke witnesses the death of Obi-Wan at Darth Vader's hands. 9, rewarding, which is seizing the sword, but he already got his sword. So it's a little different here. And I keep wondering if any of my own hero's journeys will ever get a sword, because I want one. The reward can be anything. An object, information, a secret, a reunion with a person or a group. Whatever it is, it will help the hero return to the ordinary world. But the journey is not done. He must prepare for his return journey. Luke already has his sword, so his reward is his childhood dream of becoming a pilot by joining the rebel group. The road back sounds simple, just go home. But our hero has changed, and he may have to choose again between his own personal needs and a higher calling. Luke's actual road back doesn't exist, as his home was destroyed. His ordinary world is now one without a threat of the Empire. He starts his road back by joining the rebellion and helping to destroy the Death Star. He is choosing the higher calling. Resurrection. This is the final battle. Yes, our hero's life is at stake, and possibly the whole world or galaxy. At least the lives of those he left behind are in danger. If he fails, others will suffer. The final battle is the attack on the Death Star. Many pilots die in the effort. Luke succeeds, first by a last-minute surprise save by Han Solo, who he thought had abandoned the effort, and then because, for the first time, Luke embodies Obi-Wan's words and fully trusts the Force, coming into his powers, destroying the Death Star, and taking his first steps to becoming a Jedi Knight. Last, return with the elixir, the final stage. The elixir, the reward may be literal or symbolic. Our hero has learned and grown as a person, faced terrible dangers, even death. His enemies are banished, his allies rewarded, the hero returns, but he has changed. Man and things will never be the same again. For Luke, the elixir is internal. We see him becoming a man, receiving his medal, building a new family of choice. He thinks he's in love. He doesn't know it's his sister. Finding a new purpose. He has truly been changed. So that is a classic hero's journey. We know who the hero is, and we can see the steps he has taken clearly. The monomyth is ideal for storytelling. I also believe it can be applied to our own personal journeys, although there's a whole lot of interpretation going on when you do that. There is, however, something that is not addressed. When I look at the hero's journey, I can see how it would be really easy to get caught up in the doing and the fighting that is involved in this journey. It might be easy to look at the steps, hear the call, ignore, acknowledge your doubts, find a mentor, develop your skills, meet your allies, discern your enemies, etc. But there is something implicit, but not blatantly there, in each step to take. In order to take those steps, the first thing you have to do every time is let go. You have to surrender every step of the way. Let go of what you dream your life should be, and be open to the opportunity that's in front of you. Let go of your doubts that you're not enough. Let go of your ego and know that you might not know what is best. Surrender to the advice and wisdom of your mentor or mentors. Let go of your fear and step across the threshold. Let go of your inner critic. You will find your allies and know your enemies. Let go of your doubts and fears again and again and again. Surrender to a higher calling, if you believe a higher power, and let go of your selfishness because you are changed. I believe that letting go and surrendering are crucial to a hero's journey, but some things are easier to surrender than others. Ooh, that was loud, sorry. An unconventional hero's journey, a dramatization of a true story. Day one. The big house is quiet this morning as she wanders slowly out to make her coffee. It's been years since she used a pot. Instant now will do. She takes her cup to the breakfast table surrounded by windows overlooking the pool. It's dark out. The water still. She yearns for days when the house was full. So much energy. Everybody busy. But that's gone. It's all quiet now. She wants to pick up the phone and call. But then she remembers she can't yet. He said to wait for the sun to come peeking over the wall. She'll sit and wait again. Feels like forever. That light in the back garden woke her up again. He'll get that look on his face when she tells him the drone was back, just hovering back there by the wall. Then it just flew away, big as a car it was. Day 7. I didn't sleep hardly at all last night. There was that man standing at the front gate, just standing there, staring in. Scared half to death I was, so I called the police. They stayed on the phone until the officer came. He was really kind. He couldn't find anyone there. That man must have run away and left by the time they got here. He said they'd keep an eye on the house for a few days. They called my son. He came right away, too. It was nice to have everybody here to help. Day 9. Social worker stopped by to see how I was doing. I guess because that man was here. We had a nice long talk, but she kept saying the house was too big for me to be here all alone, and she worried about the pool. But it's never been too big before. Angela was there cleaning. My son said he'll arrange for someone to stay at night. I don't have people stay in the house. I don't like it. Wish my son would move in, or my daughter. Day 11. Angela's staying during the night. It's okay. That man was back again. She didn't see him. He ran away too fast. I have a buzzer to call Angela if I need something. Day 22. Angela's here all the time. She complains I buzz her too much. My son only stays once in a while. They're changing my medication. Day 23. My son says I can't have any more wine. That's rude. Day 34. I guess there never really was a drone or a man at the gate. It sure seemed real, but now it doesn't make much sense. I just can't believe. Day 38. My daughter reminded me today that I decided when I got scared at night, it might be time for a change. Day 46. The kids want me to consider moving. I don't want to go. This is my house. What if I hate it? Day 52. I called the police when Angela went to the store today. She was gone too long and it was getting dark. My son says I need to call him, not the police. He'll check on Angela first or he'll come over. I guess he's really here a lot. Day 64. The social worker came by. She's very nice. We talked a long time again. Angela just listened in from the kitchen. Day 68. The kids all came by to talk to me today. The social worker says if I stay here, I can't ever be left alone. I don't want to be bothered. Day 69. I'm all alone. Where is everyone? Day 69. Angela's always here. She's just into everything. Day 69. My son is here. Oh, that's nice. What is he doing? Day 74. They're changing my medication again. Day 88. I guess I'm moving today. After Marina moved into the care home in Moore Park, I was able to go see her almost every day. She had her own room and shared the common room with three other women. Jackie, a middle-aged man, was her primary caregiver. They were both from San Francisco and had a lot in common. She actually had a crush on him. It took a couple of weeks for her to settle in, and then she had a renaissance where she was alert, bright, joyful, and could remember things. This lasted about 4 months before the infection started that couldn't be cured, and the dementia took over again. Medications changed, her body failed, and the end continued to be a new beginning. Why is this a hero's journey? It follows the arc. There's a lot left out in the story. Why is she a hero? It takes courage to live in confusion and continue to try to make sense of your world. It takes courage to acknowledge your imaginings once they're known. Sorry. It takes courage to accept help when it means surrendering. Some endings take a great deal of courage. Please join me and rise in body or spirit for our closing hymn, number 131, Love Will Guide Us.